Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we're going to look back on 2024, talk about the best music and movies of the year. Our guests will include music reporter Palak Jaiswal and movie critic Sean Means. They both also work for the Salt Lake Tribune. We'll ask you for your picks as well for the best music and movies of last year. You can email us to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And we bring in Salt Lake Tribune music and culture reporter Palak Jaiswal. Palak, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So you had an article recently in the Tribune, the headline is What I Listened To in 2024, which wasn't necessarily stuff that was published in 2024. Here's what stood out to me. You say, according to Apple Music Replay, I spent 20,478 minutes listening to 526 different artists, 1,572 different songs, 156 different albums. So, you love music, I think.
I do love music. Yeah, I spend a lot of time listening to it for fun and also for work. So it's the best of both worlds.
So I think your dream job would be to write about music full time, maybe?
Yeah, I would love to work for Rolling Stone one day. So fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. We'll look for that and hope for you. In the meantime, it's great to have you here and with the Salt Lake Tribune. So mostly you're writing about culture. You're able to interview some artists when they come through, but you do kind of a wrap up every year sort of thing, right? I don't know if you still write for Slug magazine.
Yeah, I am not as often as I used to, but every once in a while I'll do a national album review for them when I have enough time. So it's a fun time. At the Tribune, I really focus on mostly local music and, local artists and stuff like that. But at Slug, I get to write about national albums, which is primarily what I listen to the most, I would say. And at the end of the year at the Tribune, we always do these types of wrap-ups. I usually do music and Sean, does film. So it's fun to look back at the year and see what you listen to.
And as I mentioned at the top, and I think a lot of us listen to music this way, your top, or at least your first one, Kelsey Ballerini, you were listening to a 2022 album in 2024. All of us have a huge archive at our fingertips at any given moment.
Yeah. So the interesting thing with Kelsey Ballerini is I actually reviewed her last concert in Utah. I think it was 2 years ago, now 2 years ago, since we're in 2025. And she came at the Sandy Amphitheater. And I had known of her very vaguely beforehand. She had just released a EP a couple of months earlier that completely blew up on the internet, and I loved it. And I got to go review that concert for the Tribune. And I had so much fun at that show. And I thought, wow, I need to listen to all of her stuff because I really like it. And so I ended up going home and starting listening to the album that tour was actually about, which was Subject to Change. And so I spent a lot of time at the beginning of 2024 listening to this album. And I think it really just, Kelsey Ballerini now is kind of like Taylor Swift in a way that she still crosses over country and pop like Taylor did earlier in her career. And so I had a really fun time just listening to Kelsey's old album. I think that's some of her best work to date. So
let's hear just a little bit of this. I chose the title track. This is just off YouTube. Kelsey Ballerini, just a little bit of Subject to Change. Let's hear this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Happens when the night goes day. Going through it, I knew it. The right and the hard thing are sometimes the same. Thank God he broke my heart in my hometown. Thank God mama wanted to move. Thank God I got a strong gut feeling leading me to somewhere new.
There's just a little bit of Kelsey Ballerini. I could hear a bit of Taylor Swift in there.
Yeah, I love that song, Subject to Change. It's one of my favorite songs on the album. It's just, I think Kelsey's really good at, and you could tell that this is her country roots, I think, in a way where she can capture just what's going on in her head so well into a music format. And those lyrics, they're relatable. And that is definitely the same for Taylor Swift, right? So, who is also on my top albums of the year, which was a surprise this year.
Why was it a surprise?
I should preface this by saying I'm a pretty big Swiftie, but sometimes her albums, certain albums of hers, they take time to grow on me. I like them, but I don't love them right off the bat. And the one that she released last year, the Tortured Poets Department, was one of those. I enjoyed it upon first, second, third listen, all the way through. It's very long, but I wasn't in love with it. And then when I got my end of the year stats, I realized I actually liked it more than I thought because it was my top album of the year. Most of the tracks, I think two of the tracks out of were on my top five songs of the year. And so it's kind of weird like that. I feel like I'm the type of music listener where I listen to something over and over again on repeat to really understand it and like decide if I like it. And so I guess that's what I did with this album. I just didn't think about it that way.
So, do you like lyrics you have to listen to repeatedly to figure out? Is that clever lyrics, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. Especially with Taylor Swift's work is she has such a specific sonic sound on every single album. No one of her albums sounds the same to me personally. I'm sure if you ask someone who wasn't into pop music, they would tell you all her music sounds the same. But with the sound on the Tortured Poets Department, it was just a little more kind of slowed down than what I expected it to be. And it's a very heavy album in terms of content and like stuff she's discussing. She's talking about probably the worst heartbreak of her life. And so that really resonates in the lyrics and the songs themselves and how she put them together. So I think it just took me a while to understand. I reviewed this album for Slug Magazine, and I remembered when I was reviewing it, I wrote a line where I said something like, the real tortured poet in this case is Taylor Swift. But she's emulating a lot of people's feelings about going through a bad breakup and feeling obsessed with someone. And, you know, just all these feelings that might be familiar to someone in one way or another.
This might be a little facetious, but only partly so. I wonder, as a fan, if you worry about her current seemingly happy relationship. Is that going to produce lesser music?
You know, I don't really worry about that. I know a lot of people, I think Taylor Swift in particular gets a lot of flack about she only writes about her relationships, you know, the next guy who breaks her heart will get an album. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I think a lot of her music does revolve around that. But also, so does any other band or musician you can think of. They've all written about these topics, but she also writes about grief, right? Like she has songs about grieving her childhood. She has songs about, you know, her mother was diagnosed with some sort of illness, I believe cancer. She has a song about that. And so I think if someone is truly happy, they're probably creating a different type of art than the art they would create when they're sad. So I think she'll probably drop a great album. She had a song about Travis Kelce on this last album that I absolutely love. And I think one good example of this in the past with her music is the album 1989. Like on the surface, it's a very pop happy album, but if you really look into the lyrics, she's actually really sad. And so I think she's kind of a mastermind at just balancing those things. So I don't know if Taylor Swift will ever put out any body of work that I won't like in some shape or form. And I think this album is a really good example of that.
Let's hear just a little bit. This is her song Fortnite. This is the video. Hear Taylor Swift. Hear a bit of this.
I was supposed to be sent away, but they forgot to come and get me. is to say, I hope you're okay, but you're the reason. And no one here's to blame, but what about your quiet treason? And for a fortnight there, we were forever running to you. Sometimes ask about the weather now.
So just a bit of that, some Taylor Swift, her song Fortnight. So Palak, let's see, next one on your list, Holly Humberstone. What do you like about her?
So Holly Humberstone is actually most likely my all-time favorite artist ever. I discovered her, I actually can't even remember how I discovered her. I think I heard one of her songs on like an Instagram reel or something and immediately caught on to it. And then I listened to everything she has ever written, which, it's kind of a theme here, I think. But I saw Holly at the Soundwell in 2024. She came here on tour. And believe it or not, she actually just released her debut album, I think at the end of 2023. And so this was like her first big real album tour. And so far I had just listened to all of her EPs. I love them. And I think in the same way that, you know, we talked about Kelsey and Taylor's lyricism, I think really, I always talk about Holly's lyricism. She's so, like, her lyrics are so odd if you hear them out of context, but if you can connect with them, it's like she just communicates that complexity of human emotions so well. And I think that's really her good spot. And so, you know, I saw her for like a $25 ticket. But that's how much my ticket was at the Soundwell. It was a room packed of people who knew every single word of every single song she played. And it's the best concert I've ever been to. Holly, I think really what I love about her is she too has kind of a range where she has super slow songs. And then she has these really like fast pent up songs. And the lyrics are just hilarious. And I love them. There's a lyric on one of my favorite songs from her on her 2023 album. It's called Cocoon. And the lyric goes, I've become a taxidermy version of myself. And that is such an odd thing for someone to say, but it's, which I think what she's trying to get across is that she doesn't recognize herself, that she feels like she's numb and that kind of stuff. And I just, she's singing it in this super like popped up song. And it's just perfect. So I really love Holly. I think she's so underrated. So if anyone is listening and hasn't heard of Holly Humberstone, you should go listen to her.
All right. Well, we'll listen to her just a little bit here. This is her song called Work in Progress, which you said was one of your favorites. Let's just hear a little bit of this. It's Holly Humberstone.
If you're going down, I'll get my coat and stay out till the moon is sinking. And when you're coming up, I'll slide this home all safe and stoned. I'll keep you cradled in the kitchen. Have you lost my love? Do you need someone like me to fix you up? Cause I need someone who's tangled up.
There's a bit of Holly Humberstone. Yeah, it's a very nice work in progress. It's the title of that one. So next on your list, Palak, Tate McRae. I'm not familiar with her either.
Yeah, Tate McRae is, I think, kind of a newer artist, I would say, in terms that she really exploded also in the last year on TikTok. She is a fully like a pop girl, I think. She also has a handful of slow songs, but I think she's really known for kind of her more upbeat pop stuff. And her album Think Later released, I think later in 2023, or I discovered it her later in 2023, and that's when I started listening to her. So that carried over into 2024, and there's no way to describe Tate's music. Like, it's one of those albums I can throw on when I'm going on a walk, or my spin instructors also love Tate McRae, so they're often playing Tate in class, and she just has this really upbeat, like, fun vibe. The album title, Think Later, there's a song on the album where she says, I'm really good at living now and thinking later. That's kind of what the lyric is like. And so it's really just this super fun, like, live in the moment, have fun type album. And she's actually releasing a new album this year, I think in February or March. And I'm excited to see how she follows it up, because she had massive success from this album. Anyone who is on TikTok has probably heard some of the hits from this album, which is like X's is one of her great songs. And then there's another song called Greedy, and it's just, her sound is really indicative of her roots. I think she is a dancer, and so her tour is really just like a dance show, and she's also singing at the same time. And so I think she makes music that people can dance to, and it's really fun. I love it.
Let's hear just a little bit of Tate McRae. This is, you mentioned this in your review, Guilty Conscience, a little song of Tate McRae's.
Yes, I live with a guilty conscience. Live with a guilty conscience. Lot of messed up nights, lot of letdowns. Lot of dumb ones, bet you regret now. Lot of I'm just seeing the best of you, cause I want to. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Lot of don't trust you on the weekends. Out in pictures, you're receiving. Lot of running from all the red and blue in the rear view.
So yeah, that's kind of the aesthetic you were talking about. Kind of, act first and think about it later.
Yeah, I think she's pretty young, from what I understand. So I think it fits the vibe. But it's just a fun album. It's a really good time.
Let's see. The next on your list for 2024. By the way, we're talking to Palak Jaiswal, music reporter. With her, some of her favorites from 2024. Love to hear yours. You can get that list to me at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. So next up, Palak, on your list is it Chapel Roan or Chappelle Roan? I show my age here, because I should know that if I were younger.
No, it's okay. I was saying it wrong for months. So it's Chapel Roan. Mm-hmm. And I think this is another artist that just blew up this year. Her album came out in 2023, The Rise and Fall of the Midwest Princess, which is the one on this list. And she's also just such a fun artist. Like, her songs are so fun. They're ridiculous. And it's like the music you would hear in a club, I think, these days, right? So, like, I've been thinking a lot about, like, just reporting I've been doing lately is, like, what did people listen to in the 70s and the 80s when they went out for a good time? You know, like, I think people now listen to people like Chapel Roan or Tate McRae. And so with Chapel Roan, she kind of blew up this year as well. There's a theme here. But there's so many just bright spots, I think, on this album, where it's the type of album where you can throw it on and you know you're going to be in a good mood. She has great vocals. She's headlined a lot of major festivals in the past year. And it's interesting to watch, because I think the public has really gleaned onto a lot of these artists that have been making music for quite some time, but through TikTok, you know, have really gotten, I don't want to say more famous, but more attention to the type of music they're making. And so I think Chapel is one of those. She already had her diehard fans, who I'm sure are very mad that the entire world knows about her now, but I'm glad I do, because her songs are so fun.
Last one on your list is Megan Maroney, another artist I'm not familiar with. Tell us about her.
Yeah, I have a bit of a country streak in me. So Megan is another country artist. I think I came across her on TikTok as well. Her first album, I can't remember what it's called. I think it's called Lucky. It came out a couple years ago, and I really loved it. She's more, I think, compared to the other artists on this list, just toned down a little bit. She has more softer, sadder country songs. But in her new album, which is called Am I Okay? She has that there still, but it's a bit more upbeat. And I really love watching country artists do that and like experiment with that type of sound. I really just, this album too is just, I think, indicative of her ability to grow as an artist, because I think she knows what she's good at. But the fact that she's willing to experiment and that it works out well is pretty nice. The title track of this album is my favorite. It's kind of interesting. If you listen to it, you go into it thinking, oh, the title is Am I Okay? Like, it's probably going to be a sad song. But then she's singing and she's asking herself, am I okay? Because things are going so well, like kind of in a doubtful way. And it's just such a fun, creative way to write a song like that, that I really appreciate.
You had another article in December, kind of a year-end wrap of Salt Lake City's favorite music. The top five artists, according to the metrics here, Taylor Swift, Zach Bryan, Morgan Wallen, Suicide Boys, and Drake. Kind of an eclectic mix.
Yeah, we were able to get some Spotify data. You know, I think this actually kind of fits really well for Salt Lake. I know we have a lot of Swifties here. And Utah in general, I think, has a really deep love for country music. So Zach Bryan and Morgan Wallen were not surprising. But we also have a lot of rap fans. And so I was happy to see Drake on that list because I like Drake personally. But it's also interesting, we ended up getting some data later on from Utah as a whole from Spotify. And the favorite artists are kind of the same, but instead of Drake, we had Post Malone for Utah's top five favorite artist of 2024, according to Spotify, which I think also checks. People love Post Malone here. He's kind of a hometown favorite. So,
And then top songs on Spotify, Beautiful Things by Benson Boone, Stick Season by Noah Kahan, I Remember Everything, Zach Bryan. There's a song by Post Malone, a song by Hozier. And again, generation gap here. I'm not familiar with several of these, but this is where music has gone. I guess that brings up a point. I can point to the exact moment where I diverged, from the mainstream, started to go my own way, and I guess that's probably kind of by age. You know, you're into everything popular, and then you kind of diverge at a certain age.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think music in particular is so indicative of your music taste, is so indicative of maybe who you are as a person, how you grew up, how you listen to music. You know, I am into rap music too. I know all my top albums were pop albums mostly, but I grew up going to a school where all the kids were listening to rap music. And so I wanted to be cool. And I also listened to rap music. And now I'm into that too. And so I think music taste and how you listen to music says a lot about you. And I think, you know, these stats about Utah, Benson Boone actually has a Utah connection. He filmed his music video for Beautiful Things just out of St. George. He grew up in a Latter-day Saint family. His mentor is Dan Reynolds from Imagine Dragons. So I think it shows in Utah's music listening habits. And, you know, Noah Kahan, he is also another artist who blew up this year. And he didn't make my list of top albums this year, but I listened to him quite a lot too. So I just think a person's music taste says so much about them and like who they are.
Before I let you go, Pellick, I wanted to play you one of my favorites from this last year. I wanted to see what you think. This goes back a bit. Leanne Rimes. I've listened to a lot of her albums. She had a kind of a comeback this last couple of years. She was on The Masked Singer, etc. One of the things I look for in music is just the voice. Leanne Rimes has a world-class voice. I've been listening to this on repeat all through the year. It's a song she did not write. It's called Love is an Army. It's a beautiful song. Let's just hear a little bit of this.
Love is an army waiting for me, waiting for this girl.
I personally would like to hear that whole thing. I don't know about the rest of us, but Leanne Rimes, Love is an Army. Illustrates another thing we're talking about. This is from, I don't know, like 2003, and I just discovered it and listening to it on repeat, right? So I just wanted to be
great.
Before we let you go, Pellick, I want to get this email we got in on the music side before we turn to movies with Sean Means after a break. Yesterday we talked about chamber music on this program. Here's Mon Gregory from Ivins. He says, for chamber music lovers, I recommend the 2024 album J.S. Bach by violinist Nemanja Radulovic, which includes a couple of violin concertos, beautiful violin transcriptions of other Bach pieces. So Nemanja Radulovic, J.S. Bach from 2024. There's a recommendation. Keep those coming to upraccess@gmail.com. Well, Pellick, keep that reporting coming, and we'll check in with you a little later on music. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Tom.
Thank you. We're going to take a break, and we're going to switch to movies in the second half of this program. We'll be talking with movie critic Sean Means. Hope you'll stay with us following the break. Thanks for listening to Access U Time. Tom Williams. We're looking at the best music and movies of 2024, since the year is now complete. And we turn next to movie critic Sean Means. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So we'll point people to moviecricket.net. I guess that's the place where you can find your reviews. You also edit and write some at the Salt Lake Tribune. Let's jump in. A lot of movies I'm sure you watched in 2024. Let's talk about a few that have the top of your list.
Okay. Let's do backwards out of my top 10. Do the 10 to 5 or 10 to 6. Number 10 was Amelia Perez, which is available on Netflix. Fascinating sort of telenovela level emotion was Zoe Saldana as a lawyer who is recruited to help a drug lord fulfill their dream of disappearing and transitioning to a woman. Great cast, including Carla Sofia Gascon in the title role, and Selena Gomez also really good in here. Number 9, Flo. This is a animated movie from Latvia, of all places. Wordless, no dialogue, of a black cat trying to survive and navigate as an apparent apocalypse is happening, and the flood waters are rising all over, and the cat has to get on a boat, which is also populated by other animals, and the other animals, even though they don't speak, this is not a Disney movie where they stand on their back legs and sing Disney songs. have to learn to cooperate, even though they are different species. Number eight, A Real Pain. Jesse Eisenberg wrote, directed, and starred in this movie as a New Yorker who gets together with his cousin, played by Kieran Culkin, who's just amazing here, on a tour of Holocaust sites in Poland. They are paying tribute to their grandmother who had recently passed, who had come from the old country. Great comedy and drama there. Number seven, kind of a forgotten movie called Suncoast. This had Laura Linney as a mom navigating the imminent death of her son, who was in a coma, and her other child, the daughter, who would just like to have a normal life and isn't really allowed to have one because of the circumstances in her life. And then number six, I'm going to say this on public radio, My Old Ass. This is a very funny, very sweet movie about a 18-year-old about to go to college. She goes camping with her friends and trips on mushrooms and meets her 39-year-old self, who gives her some pointers about what her future is going to be like, and makes her rethink a lot of things in her life. So that's the second half of the five. Or the second half of my top 10.
Before we go to the top five, I wonder if you noticed any trends this last year.
You know, it's always hard to spot because you can see generally that obviously the big blockbusters will always be out there, and certainly this year you had Dune Part Two, you had Deadpool and Wolverine. Disney, of course, can't seem to do wrong in a lot of things that, Moana 2, Inside Out 2, even after the first week, Mufasa actually scored at the box office, regardless of quality. I mean, I liked Moana 2, I liked Inside Out 2. I did not care for Mufasa. I thought it was a waste of everyone's time. Even so, I think you do see, and you have to sort of look for them in the cracks and crevices, but you do see smaller, unusual, and idiosyncratic movies come out. And I mean, it's one of the reasons we had the Sundance Film Festival to get that sort of unusual storytelling going. But you've got movies, you've got movies that are being talked up for the Oscars like this year, like A Complete Unknown, the Timothée Chalamet playing Bob Dylan biopic, Anora, which is a screwball comedy about a sex worker who has a love affair with the son of a Russian oligarch, which is a very funny but kind of offbeat movie. And then we'll talk about the five that are in my list, top my list. The great thing about movies, I've always thought, is that you're going to find something you like, and no matter what your tastes are, what your particular favorites are, there's always something for somebody out there.
Well, let's hear the top five.
Okay, well, number five was September 5. This actually hasn't hit theaters yet. It's opening next week on the 17th in Utah. This is a sort of you are there in the middle of the control room for ABC Sports in at the Munich Olympics in 1972, and as the sporting events give way to an actual news event, which is a terrorist attack. Terrorists take over the Olympic Village and hold the Israeli Olympic team hostage. And it's about what's going on in the control room as they're trying to navigate this big story, as the sports department is trying to prove that they should be able to handle it and not hand it over to the news division. And also the ethics of realizing that what they're putting out on TV, everybody is watching, and everybody includes the hostages and the terrorists. So it's a great sort of ticking clock thriller, all set in this newsroom, and it's just fascinating. The sort of immediacy, it is just you're gripped to the armrest throughout. Number four, talking about the blockbusters, Dune Part Two. Denis Villeneuve, the director, continuing the adaptation of Frank Herbert's, you know, grand epic space drama. Timothée Chalamet again evolving into, you know, from a kid to this cagey political strategist and a reluctant messiah figure, and it's a fascinating look at how, you know, the dangers of manipulating religious fervor to seize an empire, which is what happens. Number three, Civil War, another parable for modern times, I guess. Alex Garland's drama of a near future where the United States is torn apart by war internally. And it is seen from the viewpoint of the journalists who are in the middle of it, you know, war correspondents, the lead one played by Kirsten Dunst, who are less concerned about how we got here and more concerned about how a war zone forms right in the middle of your own hometown. Number two, this is not out yet either. It's coming out in January, February. It's a movie called The Seed of the Sacred Fig. This is a drama from Iran. It was actually filmed in secret in Iran, and the director had to smuggle out the footage on a thumb drive and then smuggle himself out because he was being arrested. Matter of fact, if he goes back to Iran, he faces 8 years in prison and a flogging. So just the making, the there's a movie to be made about how this movie got made, but it's a fascinating drama about an attorney in Tehran who is given a job as an investigator for the judiciary, and how this job within the government in Iran forces him and his family to keep a low profile for their own safety. But when student protests happen and his daughters are in the middle of it, it causes a massive tension within the family. It's a fascinating drama. And then number one, and I've had arguments with my colleagues about this one, but my number one for the year was called Tuesday. Debut feature by a writer-director named Danya O. Pusik. It is sort of an absurdist look at death. You have a mother and daughter, mother played by Julie Louis-Dreyfus, whose teen daughter who is paraplegic, is about to face death. And death is personified in this movie by a mangy macaw, a parrot, can grow to the size of a room or shrink to the size to hide inside one's ear, and the symbolism of death as this bird who listens to how people are reacting to their imminent death all around the world, and basically just doing their job and saying, well, now it's time to go. It is a fascinating look, especially for Julie Louis-Dreyfus's performance as a mother who will go to very extreme measures to stave off the inevitable for her daughter. It is heartbreaking. It is fascinating. And the idea, it really shows how death is both, you know, intensely personal and cosmically universal. It's just the most fascinating movie I saw all this year.
What were the debates with your colleagues? They think it should be placed lower.
I had some of my colleagues didn't groove on it the way I did, I guess. Maybe they didn't buy the parrot. I don't know. this is the great thing. The Utah Film Critics Association, we meet every year. We're meeting actually on Saturday. To talk over like the best of the year, and the most fun of it all is the discussions and the arguments, because we all come at it from very strong positions and very strong emotions and arguments about what we think a great movie is, and we're all in agreement that like most of these movies that we talk about, we may not agree where they go on the list. We all agree that they are good generally. I mean, there's very, very seldom does a movie pop up that where some of the critics love it intensely, and other critics think it's the worst thing ever. We are all in agreement that the movies that we're talking about are movies that are definitely trying to do something, and definitely not just trying to, get butts in seats and to sell popcorn. And that's and so it's always fun. It's always fun when we get together and talk about those.
Yeah, I imagine that would be fun. What makes a movie cross that line from good to great? Is it they're trying something?
For me, over the years, it's been I want to see something I haven't seen before. And that's I've seen a lot of movies, so that's not always easy. But I think that every, hit me with a good story. Hit me with a story that is, I mean, even in a fiction film, a story that has some truth to it, that has some emotional authenticity to it, that is genuine in what they're trying to say. That can be a gritty personal drama like The Piano Lesson, which is being talked up in the Oscar season. It can be a space opera like Dune. It's like Roger Ebert used to say, a movie is not what it's about. A movie is how it goes about it. That how you tell a story is as important as what the story is. And that's always, I mean, you can do, it's often noted that the Maltese Falcon, the classic, 1941 John Huston movie, that was actually like the fourth remake of that movie that Hollywood had tried. And nobody remembers the other ones because the one they finally got right just did it so perfectly. So sometimes originality, is not the be all and end all. I mean, I've seen some original movies that where I will go, yeah, nobody's ever done that before, and now we know why. So.
Right. Yeah. That's the top 10 best. Now
Yeah.
there in any year there's going to be some real stinkers, and you have a list, at least
Yes,
on your on
I
Movie
did.
Cricket.net.
I did. I always struggle with whether or not I should do a bottom 10 because on one hand, everybody tried. You want to, and not that we're giving out participation trophies, but nobody intends to make a bad movie. Nobody, everybody thinks that the movie they're going to make is going to be fine. Say something to somebody. But sometimes the art, sometimes when that happens, the filmmakers are so confident of what they're trying to say that they lose sight of the goal, maybe. My worst for the year, and it was funny that this was joked about on the Golden Globe by Nikki Glaser on the Golden Globes this weekend. My worst for the year was Joker, Fully Adieu. And bear in mind, I wasn't that big a fan of the first Joker movie, the with Joaquin Phoenix. I thought that it was I thought the first one, and I thought the first one was glorifying violence without a reason to do so. And I thought in this one, they decided they wanted to go back to do it again, and they realized they didn't have anything to say, and they went ahead and did it anyway. And worst of all, they wasted, I thought, what could have been a really good performance by Lady Gaga. She was out there pitching as hard as possible, but with nothing to work against, I thought. So that was my worst for the year. A lot of the movies I have on my worst list are extensions of franchises that I don't understand why they feel the need to extend those franchises. Despicable Me 4 was on there. Bad Boys Ride or Die. The Garfield movie. I said with the Garfield movie that when you cast Chris Pratt to voice your character, you've already run out of ideas even before you've started. And like that, and that movie was a great example of that. It was, I mean, the fact that I spent more time counting the Olive Garden product placement references than I did actually, enjoying whatever they were trying to do for a story, I think says a lot about that movie. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I think the fact that the Ghostbusters franchise has just become a nostalgia factory, where basically they can't get away from the first movie, and because they are so afraid of their fan base, because the fan base revolted when the franchise actually tried to do something interesting and unusual by recasting with four female comedians. And that movie got trashed by the fans of the original movie. I think because since then and because of that, they've the people who made the movies are just so afraid of doing anything that is going to tick off the audiences. And when that is your and when that is your modus operandi, you've already lost because the point is not giving the audience what they want. The point is giving the audience something they don't know they want until you give it to them. And that's what makes a good movie in my mind. So,
Just, yeah, we just
yeah.
have two or three minutes left. I wanted to, well, anything else you want to say about 2024? But I wanted to look ahead to Sundance. What anything you're looking forward to there?
Well, Sundance, I mean, the great thing about Sundance is the things I'm looking forward to frequently don't turn out to be the ones I am talking about when it's over. The great example for me was 2012 when this movie made in Louisiana with people you'd never heard of, and the lead actress was a 9-year-old girl with a name you couldn't pronounce, Quvenzhané Wallace, and it and you saw the movie and it was Beasts of the Southern Wild, and it was just such a perfectly formed, amazing film that you just couldn't believe that they had managed to make this film and tell the story, and the standing ovations it got at the festival were proof of that. And then came back later and was an Oscar nominee. So, one thing I'm looking forward to is based on past track records, one of the movies I'm most looking forward to is a documentary called Sly Lives. This is a documentary about Sly Stone, as in Sly and the Family Stone, the great, funk R&B artist who people may not realize is still alive. So 81, living, I think, in Texas or someplace. And this documentary is by Amir Thompson, better known to people as Questlove from The Roots. He had a documentary at Sundance a couple years ago called Summer of Soul, which was about the Harlem Music Festival in 1969, which included a lot of footage of a lot of great artists, including Sly and the Family Stone. And I think the fact that Questlove, in his first documentary, knocked it out of the park, and that he is returning to, I think, a fascinating subject, because I think Sly and the Family Stone is one of those acts that you can't believe actually came from this planet. That they it was so ahead of everybody. I mean, you watch Sly and the Family Stone and you think, okay, that's where Prince got it. That's where rap artists, that's where a lot of rap artists got their a lot of their ideas. And he, and he, Sly Stone had this multi-gender, multi-ethnic, multi-racial musical ensemble decades before that was the vogue. That was the trend. And created, amazing, brilliant music. And I want to see what Questlove can say with that. So that's just one example, but there's a lot of others. There's a documentary about Marley Matlin that I think is going to be really cool. There's a documentary about Gallaudet University, the only deaf university in the world, in Washington, D.C., and the revolt that happened in the 80s when they hired a new president and the student body said, well, why don't we have a deaf president? And the movie is called Deaf President Now, because that was the chant that the student protesters used. That one's going to be interesting. It's co-directed by Davis Guggenheim, who has done many movies at the festival before, including An Inconvenient Truth. That's co-directed by Niall DeMarco, who is a actor and model who is himself deaf. He's best known for like winning Dancing with the Stars a couple years back. So that's another one that is going to be interesting. The other, Something else that is in the premieres at Sundance that is going to be interesting is actually a remake, and that's a weird thing to see at Sundance. But the movie is called The Wedding Banquet, and it is a remake of a 1994 movie. It's actually one of Ang Lee's first films, and this is about a lesbian couple who, to raise money for their IFV, one of them agrees to marry a gay man. So that the gay man can A, get his green card, and B, get his parents off his back. And it blows up into a bigger thing than that, because the family shows up and they want the big party and they want the big, they want the big ceremony. The original was amazing, and the people that are involved in this remake include Kelly Marie Tran and Lily Gladstone from Killers of the Flower Moon. I love the fact that even a remake can be independent and say something new and different and be worthy of being on the Sundance roster.
Well, we'll look forward to all of those, and thank you so much for recapping 2024 for us, and we'll look forward to your reviews as they come out. Moviecritic.net is where to go for Sean
Movie
Means.
Cricket.
Movie,
cricket.
oh, that's right. Movie Cricket. Sorry. Yeah. Get it right. Moviecricket.net. Sean Means is the Movie Cricket. Sean, thank you so much.
Happy to do it.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah today.